The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Does your husband look at you like he used to? Do you want more attention from him? Do you want to feel irresistible again? It's time to take charge of your romance. Welcome to the Married with Romance Show. Your host is Emily Ann Weber. You can make your love life more exciting and bring back that sparkle in his eye like it used to be. Now, here is your host, Emily Ann Weber.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Married with Romance Show. I'm so glad you're here today because we've got a really exciting show and a really exciting guest that's going to teach us so many things that'll help us in our marriage and get rid of conflict in our marriage. So I have a question for y'all. How often do you and your husband or you and your wife fight about money? You know, money is one of the top three things that couples have conflict with, and it can go from occasionally fighting about money to fighting about money every day. And if you are fussing and fighting about money, you don't have time for romance, and you're certainly not very happy. So my guest today is Jordan Goodman. Jordan is the author of Master Your Money Type, which we're going to be talking about a lot today. He is the host on another Voice America channel, the Business Network, and his show is called The Money Answers, and his website is moneyanswers.com. Jordan, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Glad to be with you, Emily. Appreciate it.
Oh, well, you have said, and we've talked about, that you're not only going to give us some great money information, but you're also going to talk to us about how each of us have a money personality.
Very much
and,
so, yeah.
Yes, and plus a whole lot of other tools and tips too. But to start with, tell me a little bit, or tell us all a little bit, why you wrote this book, because this is not just a how to do your money book, is it?
No, it's very much about the psychology of money. People make all kinds of decisions not based on financial judgment or rationality in any way, but for emotional reasons. And so in this book called Master Your Money Type, which they can find out about at my website, moneyanswers.com, I separate people into six different money types. We can go into them in more detail, but just to tell you briefly what they are, they're the strivers, the ostriches, the debt desperados, the coasters, the high rollers, and the squirrels. Those are my six types that I've kind of come up with over the years. And there are psychological reasons why people are like that. And basically what I'm saying is, learn what money type you are and be the best one you can be. If you're a squirrel, be the best squirrel you can be. Don't try to be I don't want to be a squirrel, I want to be a high roller. It's like, okay, you're a squirrel. So figure out how to be a really good squirrel instead of being embarrassed about it all the time.
Exactly. And you know, money is one of those things that's it's a hot topic for everybody. You can have a hot button that your mate can push, and you can go from 0 to 60 just like that.
Absolutely, both positively or negatively.
Positively or negatively, exactly.
Right. So, for example, I mean, people in many cases have different backgrounds, the way they brought up about not only emotionally but money, and that can cause an awful lot of conflict. Over 50% of divorces are because of financial conflicts one way or the other. And
yes,
that can be solved if people understand it. In many cases, people do not talk about money. They might talk about sex more than they talk about money, actually, because that's easier in a certain way. It's actually interesting. I had a little story yesterday, Emily. I do a lot of call-in radio shows and things around the country and talk to these people all the time. And this woman, 63, her husband 61. She lives in Oregon, and her husband is in North Carolina. And she knew him in elementary school in Wisconsin. And they both got married, had kids, went their separate ways. And however it happened, they got back together again. Now they're going to get remarried. Each of them is married. They're going to be remarried, but not remarried to each other. Mm-hmm. And she's going to sell her house, move everything she's got from Oregon to North Carolina to be with him. And she said to me, they've decided to do this. She said to me, do you think I should have a money discussion with him now?
Oh, my gosh.
I said, maybe it's a good idea to do that before you sell your house and move everything. And but he's so wonderful. I said, well, yes, I'm sure he is. But how about these other things like assets and who's going to own what and IRA? She said, well, it was just too awkward to talk about that. I think we should have the money discussion now as the moving van is coming. You know, it's like, it is amazing. I hear this all the time, Emily. People just can't deal with the subject of money, and I hope they get along well, but maybe there's some things I should work out before the moving van comes.
Why do you think people have such a hard time talking about money? Why is it such a it's almost like people think it's just going to magically appear and magically grow. But why do you think people have such a hard time talking about it?
I have a name for that. I call that the white knight syndrome, which women have more, which is like,
yes,
the white knight's going to come along and save me from all my bad habits, and somehow it's just all going to magically happen. So they have two visions. The white knight syndrome is the other, and that's the kind of positive being saved. And the negative side of that is what I call the bag lady syndrome, which I do talk about in Master Your Money Type as well, mm-hmm. which is if I make one wrong mistake, I'm on the street as a bag lady and I'm totally penniless, basically. So that's why they're just totally paralyzed in fear by taking any risks whatsoever. And so they kind of go between these two extremes of doing nothing and hoping they're going to get saved and being super, super conservative and make sure their money doesn't grow and take any risk whatsoever because they're instantly going to be on the streets.
There's
a lot of emotion here you're talking about. It's not about money at all, actually. It's about what's in people's minds.
Because money is never just about money, is it?
No, it's about emotion. It really is.
Exactly.
And so there's a whole history that goes with it. You know, the way you were brought up, either you do the same thing or you do the opposite. So I'll give you kind of an intergenerational example. Our grandparents went through the Depression for the most part. Mm-hmm. And in the Depression, they saw their parents lose their homes. The banks were closed. They lost their farms. They lost their businesses. They were unemployed, you know, just horrible things. And so what came out of that was save everything. Never take any risk whatsoever, because if you do, you're going to lose it all, basically.
Right.
Kind of the attitude that came out of what I call the Depression era mentality.
Right. Don't waste.
Their kids, and don't take any risk, the ultimate squirrel mentality. Their kids, in general, were the baby boomers, born after World War II, who had prosperity. They had the 50s and 60s, and everything was going up, and money was plentiful, and the economy was booming. What's to worry about, you know? And so they had a completely opposite experience from their family. So it doesn't mean, just because your parents or grandparents are depressionary mentality, that you have to be like that. Their kids, in the most part, the baby boomers, were the complete opposite of that.
Yeah. So as much as anything, it's just being maybe aware of your strengths and your weaknesses, but also, I guess, your money story. I always say people have a money story, and they do their money like they do their life, I think. Because I'm coming from
a script. I call it a money script. Yeah. And you have a script that you kind of play over and over again. So if your father lost the farm in the Depression in Oklahoma and went to, you know, California, like the Beverly Hillbillies or something, to survive against the dust storms, you're about scarcity. You're about avoiding loss, avoiding risk of any kind. If you were brought up in the 50s and 60s and, you know, your father did really well and the stock market did well and you had this great experience and you went to college and went around the world and had this, that's just as far from you as could be. And you're, it's all about prosperity and you want to try new things and get the latest gadgets and you're not worried about risk at all.
So exactly. I was also my grandparents. I was a grandchild of the Depression era, folks. My grandparents were newlyweds in the Depression, and I can remember as an adult, my grandmother made a quilt top out of old umbrellas because you didn't waste anything, you know.
That's
and
right.
I thought, my goodness, why don't we just go buy some material?
But that's not the way a baby boomer would think, right? They would think that would be silly. Actually,
exactly.
Just get a new one. You know, that's
the way. Exactly.
So it's really based on that kind of life history. So that life history really informs the way people think about money today, and either positive or negative. And that's where they get into these squirrels. So in the Master Your Money type book, I have the financial script and then the emotional script as to how it got you there emotionally. So in the case of the depression era mentality, their emotions are about avoiding risk and saving every last penny because the world could come to an end as it did in the 1930s for people.
Yes.
And the baby boomers have the exact opposite emotional script. What could go wrong? Everything's going up and prosperity is all to be had. It's about my choice and what I want to do next. And they don't think about risk. So,
and it's not always so fun to look at the emotional part into it. It's easier to look at the bottom line, the dollars and cents, do this, invest this way, do this. But then when you look at your emotional piece of it and you kind of go, eek, eek, that doesn't quite feel so good. But if you are aware of, like you said, what you want, what do you want to do, and you make that work for you, but first you have to be aware of it. And so you're
where
saying
it gets
that.
What's really interesting is when you have a couple, okay, and which is we'll talk about maybe after the break here, but when you have two people in a couple of different money types, it can be quite interesting. If you have a squirrel and a high roller, they have two completely different views of the world. Okay.
I don't know how they're married.
Well, usually people marry of different money types. Most are opposite types. There's a saver and there's a spender. If you have two of the same, it doesn't make for a very interesting life. If you have two squirrels, they're just kind of sitting in the corner counting their nuts until the disaster comes. That's not a lot of fun for a marriage, okay? If you have two high rollers, they're just out taking all kinds of wild and crazy risks and hope that there's a net to catch them when they fall. So that can be kind of out of balance, too. So
have a lot more fun than the squirrels.
They might have a two high rollers. But I'm just saying, if you have two opposite ones, there are some problems that there's also a certain balancing. It can be actually a positive in the long run if they can work out their conflicts.
Yes, yes. Do you, I know we've got to run take a break in just a minute, but do you find that when you have couples that are the opposite, that is it usually one half of the couple that wants to work on the money issue, or do you find that they both tend to be agreeable to working on it?
In many cases, the women do not want to work on it.
This is
my experience.
And interesting.
Particularly older ones. It's like, it's the man's stuff. He'll take care of me. It's what I call the upper right-hand drawer syndrome. When Herbie dies, all the papers in the upper right-hand drawer syndrome, and I'll be fine.
That sounds about right. That sounds like a lot of people I know.
Well, that's right. And so they delegate these things. They don't particularly want to talk about money. I do a lot of speaking as well, and I spoke at a continuing care community in Florida recently. And, you know, you go to these places, and they're 80-plus, and 90% of them are women, basically. And I did this whole seminar about all the things they can do with their money and all these wonderful things. And they came up and they said, well, you know, Herbie died 25 years ago and he set me up. And I haven't looked at it since and I assume it's fine. Basically, that was their attitude.
I assume it's fine.
I've never looked at it. The guy tells me it's okay. And that's all they know. Maybe it's an older generation kind of thing. But in many cases, women delegate this to the man. And that's asking for trouble, particularly if things go wrong and there's divorce and they have no idea what happened.
Exactly, exactly. Well, let's run, take a quick break and come back and finish this discussion because you have a lot to teach us.
Absolutely.
So thank you all for joining us so much, and we'll be right back after the commercial break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You need to live up to your full potential. You've heard that for years, but now there's a channel to help you get there. Introducing the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Our listeners have told us that they want to be motivated, hear about success stories, and positive encouragement around the clock. And we've responded to you. The Voice America Empowerment Channel is the home of the world's top life coaches, entrepreneurs, and success experts. Listen to the Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's here at VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you living the life you were truly meant to live? Join host Janice Darrow each week for Living the Best You, Our program guides you to the empowerment of the real you and your inner intuitive voice. That inner voice can and does lead us to a magnificent and empowering life when we learn to listen to it. Gain greater tools on how to listen and follow your dreams through Janice's wisdom and those of her enlightened guests. You'll be ready to live a more fulfilled life. Tune in to Living the Best You every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You're listening to The Married with Romance Show with Emily Ann Weber. If you want to call into our show with a question or comment, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to emily@marriedwithromance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I am joined today by Jordan Goodman, and we are talking about his book, Master Your Money Type. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the six money types, right, Jordan?
Absolutely. So these are six different types, and they can find out more about this at my website, which is moneyanswers.com. So the first money type is what I call the strivers. Now, these are people who, in many cases, are entrepreneurs. They're really people who are going to make something happen. They might have started from a lower economic time frame, but they really doing well for themselves. They're willing to take some risk and really work very, very hard to kind of make it happen. So the good part is they can make things happen. In many cases, they don't have much of a life because they're so involved in their business and making it happen that they don't have enough time for the relationship, and that can cause a bit of trouble. But that's the basic idea behind this driver.
Are they the workaholics?
Exactly. Okay. Workaholics. Which can really take a toll on a relationship.
Yes, it can.
And particularly if both of them are strivers, there's very little time for the relationship if they're just working full time. So.
And no time to make children. So.
No. You have to fit it in the schedule, I guess, in between everything else. Yes. And then even once the children come along, there's no time for the kids, I guess.
So. Exactly.
So that's a bit on the strivers. The ostriches are people who don't really like to deal with money one way or the other. And now there can be a positive or negative. Positive way is, well, I've got more important things to do with my money. You know, my staff will do it, or my accountant does it, or, you know, I'm making deals and so on. I don't really have to worry about money. And then there's the kind of, I'm an artiste, or I'm a musician, or money is beneath me. I just don't have to deal with things like that. So they don't open statements. They don't get insurance policies.
I'm a woman. I don't deal with that.
You don't have to deal with that. Or, I haven't looked at their 401k statements in about 20 years, and they basically have no idea what's going on. They don't pay their bills on time. So it's nice to kind of float along like this, not thinking anything is going to happen, but something will happen, okay? You'll start getting collection notices, or your life insurance policy lapses, or and I see this all the time. Well, somehow money just takes care of itself. Or it gets into white knight syndrome, is that my husband will take care of all the money.
Uh-huh.
That's a classic kind of female ostrich behavior. It's like, well, I don't deal with it. He deals with it. And when he dies, it'll all just kind of magically take care of itself somehow.
We wish.
The upper right-hand drawer syndrome again.
Yes.
The ostriches. I mean, they don't have wills. They don't have life insurance policies. They don't know who the financial advisors are. They've never seen a statement. I mean, it seems amazing, but there's a lot of people in that category who just don't deal with money, basically.
So that surprises me that you say they don't have wills, because I would think even if you didn't want to deal with your money, you would still, that to me seems like a responsibility kind of thing to your heirs.
Ostriches is not about responsibility. Ostriches is about avoiding responsibility. Over 50% of the people in this country do not have wills, and they die without a will, and then some judge somewhere is going to tell everybody where your paintings are going to go and who's going to take care of your kids and all these, because there's no will.
I didn't realize it was that high.
Easiest thing to put off and just not get around to it somehow. Do you have a will yourself, Emily?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you're not an ostrich then, so that's a
good thing.
All right. The next category are what I call the debt desperados. And those are the people, in a certain way, they're very optimistic. They go into more debt thinking that the way to get out of debt is to go into more debt. And they keep piling it up until they hit rock bottom, and then they reform. It's almost like being an alcoholic to some extent. Mm-hmm. So they'll borrow against their home equity to invest in something that falls apart, and then they'll borrow more, and then they'll borrow against their credit cards to pay off the home equity, and they have Peter to borrow from Peter to play Paul, and it's this whole game that goes on. And people are doing this a lot today, particularly for student loans. I mean, student loans are up to about $1.3 trillion now.
Wow.
And I'm all in favor of education, but a lot of people are taking on a huge amount of debt. Mm-hmm. $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, counting graduate school, $300,000. I mean, medical school is like $300,000 today in the hope that it's going to pay off. And in many cases, it's not paying off because they're not getting the jobs to service this debt. And they're in really, really deep trouble. A lot of people have 30-year student loans.
Wow.
They're never going to be able to pay back.
Wow.
And you can't discharge it in bankruptcy either.
How do you buy a house if you have a student loan for 30 years?
You don't. And then this is changing society in a major way. It's changing relationships. I mean, in the old days, you had, whatever, $5,000 or $10,000 of student loans. And you go out and you form a household and you buy cars and homes and have kids and all those kind of things. Over 50% of the people who are about to graduate in the next month or so are going to go back and live at home. Mm-hmm. And they're living in their mother's basement. And they may get a job, but they're not getting enough job to get a home and car and establish a relationship and a household on their own. A lot of young people living at home into their late 20s and 30s because of the amount of student loans they have.
Yes.
So, I mean, in many cases, not avoidable, but they're taking on an awful lot of debt. And those would be in the desperado case. And the same thing with credit cards. A lot of people have a huge amount of credit card debt. They get these free checks in the mail.
Yes.
They're like 25% interest with a 3% fee on top of it. And it looks easy. Oh, good. I'll just sign this check. That's fun. Let's go on a vacation.
And they have a huge credit limit, and they think, oh, I can use it, but they can't pay it back. So.
And then they raise the credit limit and make it easy.
Yes.
Handing a drunk a bottle of whiskey or something, you know? This is a very big problem. There's a lot of people. Let me just give quickly some practical advice to people in the debt desperado camp.
Yes,
if you have
please.
A lot of credit card debt, particularly, you should go to a national nonprofit credit counseling place because they can get you 6-7% interest rate, something like that, get you out of debt much quicker than you ever can on your own if you're paying 25% or something like that. My favorite one is called Cambridge Credit Counseling. Their website is cambridgecredit.org. They're a nonprofit group. Their phone number, 800-897-2200. They're currently helping about 1 million people in that debt desperado category who are way over their heads in debt. They get them under control and get their debts paid off in 2 or 3 years. And in the college debt,
great.
We talked about the student debt. One thing you can do is consolidate your student loans into one payment at a lower interest rate, typically like 3-4%. A website to help people there would be consolidatecollege.com. Help people go through the process of consolidating the student loans into one interest rate at a lower rate. So that, you know, some advice to help the debt desperados there.
And that's invaluable because I have a lot of young listeners and young single and young married listeners, and that's a big help.
Both
Thank
those things, both credit card debt and student loans.
Yes.
Big ones for younger people, that's
yes.
right.
Yeah.
Okay, now the next of our money types are what are called the coasters. And coasters are people that are coasting along, thinking basically everything's fine, until they hit what I call a financial brick wall. Okay, it's like, oh, the kid just turned 17. I guess we should start saving for college now. Or, oh, I just turned 62. I guess I should start saving for retirement. It's like, I never got around to it, basically. So things seem fine, and this is classic baby boomer behavior. It's like basically there's an assumption that everything's fine and it'll all kind of take care of itself to some extent. And it kind of does until the thing you need to have been saving for the last 20 years comes up and it's too late to do anything about it.
And as when I did the book, I'm a coaster. I don't have debt. I don't have, you know, but I kind of just coast along, which is why I have a financial advisor.
Well, you need you're a coaster. You need a financial advisor to wake you up because it's very easy to just coast along and think everything's fine until it isn't. And you if you're saving for college, this is not something you can do in a year. You should start when the kid's born and do it on a regular basis. Retirement. You're going to be living 30 years in retirement. You can't start saving when you're 60 or something like that. So
absolutely not.
All these kind of things. Or a down payment for a house. People say, oh, well, I've been renting. now I'm going to buy a house. Well, okay, where's your 20% down payment? Well, I haven't saved it up yet. You know, so these things take a while to save up for, and most people, the coasters, just kind of never get around to it. So they're lulled into complacency by everything being okay, seemingly, until it isn't. That's the coasters.
You know, I was flying the other day with a young couple. They were in their, maybe not quite mid-30s, but this was really unusual. They said that he went to flight school to become a pilot. They paid as they went. They didn't borrow all this money. It took longer, but they paid it as they went. Then they bought a condo that is paid for now because they saved up their money to buy the condo. So here is a young couple, not even 35 years old. They have no debt. Their home is paid for. Their education for work is paid for. And I thought, my goodness, there's not many of those you talk to.
They're almost un-American.
Yes, yes.
Because most people don't do that at all. They borrow to the hilt for education. They borrow to the hilt to buy houses they can't afford, to buy cars they can't afford, and you know, classic debt desperado behavior. So those people did really well. So that's terrific, but
well.
Very, very unusual.
Very unusual.
All right, the next category are what are called high rollers. Now, these are people who are even more extreme than the strivers as far as taking risk. They're very super optimistic, which is nice, but not everything always works out. So it's like being on a high wire act and not having a safety net underneath you. These are people who do entrepreneurial. They do day trading. They do flipping of houses. They do multi-level marketing. Whatever it is, they think they're going to do really, really well. And some of them do, but a lot of them don't. Mm-hmm. And not having that safety net can be kind of devastating on the downside. So psychologically, maybe their parents were entrepreneurs or made it well, and they think, well, that sounded good, so I can do that too. I don't need a day job. I'm going to go out and do day trading on stocks or something, or commodities, and that way I'll make my money very quickly. So it's born out of optimism, but in many cases it doesn't end well because they don't have the training or it doesn't work out for whatever reason. Right. Lots of businesses fail. Lots of day traders lose money.
Would you say these are kind of the drama queens of the group?
There's definitely drama. There's high drama on the way up and high drama on the way down.
On the way down, yes.
And then they become dead desperados, I guess. And then the sixth of our types are the squirrels, which is the complete opposite of what we just talked about, the high rollers. Squirrels are consumed by fear. And as squirrels themselves do, they hide nuts for the winter and they're always concerned about what's going to be coming next. Squirrels typically are depression era mentality. Save everything, don't take any risk, everything is bad. As high rollers are super optimistic, squirrels are super pessimistic and want to protect themselves against the coming catastrophe out there. So they don't run very interesting lives, but they certainly are ready for the future if anything bad were to happen. But the problem today, for example, a lot of them keep money in CDs and money market funds and treasury bills, which are so-called safe, except it's not earning anything. You're earning zero on those today. So they may think they're safe, but in fact, they're losing purchasing power because while their money's sitting there earning nothing, their costs for gas and food and tuitions and taxes and healthcare and everything else is going up. So they're actually losing purchasing power every day that goes by while they think they're totally safe. So that's the exact opposite fear of the squirrel is taking risk compared to a high roller where they think, I got to take a lot of risk. So those are kind of the two opposite ends of the spectrum of money types, I guess you might say.
Now, would a squirrel be, I hear this a lot, our retirement is our home. Would that be a squirrel, you think?
Well, to some extent, yes. They've been piling money into paying off their mortgage, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Squirrels are very debt resistant, or you know, hate debt.
Yes, yes.
Which is a good thing, but a lot of people are in what I call house rich, cash poor situations. They've got this wonderful house around them that's paid for, but they don't have enough money to buy the groceries. Okay,
yes.
So you can get a little extreme about this. And there's a lot of people out there who are house rich and cash poor. And then they don't want to sell the house. So how could they get access to the value in the house?
Right, well, because it's home.
They could do a reverse mortgage is one way to do it.
Yeah.
They could do a home equity loan, but you're going to have to borrow against it to get the money out of it unless you sell it. So squirrels do tend to be house rich and cash poor, I agree with you.
Well, let's take a break and then come back and we will finish this discussion. So thank you all for joining us and we'll be right back after this break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Hi, I'm Ed Krell, CEO of Destination Maternity. We proudly support the March of Dimes work to reduce the rate of premature birth. The numbers have gone down in the past 5 years, but still, nearly 500,000 babies are born too soon in the United States each year. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and community programs to help more moms have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Join us in working together for stronger, healthier babies. Visit marchofdimes.com.
Want more positivity in your life? Are you ready to get healthy, happy, and energized? Join the Stella Donna Goddess Gals, Cynthia Bryan, and Heather Brittany for a power hour of stimulating, supportive conversation on Star Style, Be the Star You Are. A lineup of best-selling authors, celebrities, and experts. Join the effervescent mother-daughter dynamic duo in this upbeat, positive, life-changing talk radio playground. Star Style, Be the Star You Are, Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Lend us your ears. It's power time.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Listening to The Married with Romance Show with Emily Ann Weber. If you want to call into our show with a question or comment, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to emily@marriedwithromance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Joining me today is Jordan Goodman from MoneyAnswers.com, and he also has a show on the Business Network of Voice America, The Money Answers Show. And we are talking about Master Your Money Type, which is the book he wrote. One of the books. You've written several books.
13, actually, yes.
Wow. You're a busy man. But this is the one we're talking about today is Master Your Money Type, and we're talking about the six money types. And so, if you don't mind, Jordan, give us a little quick preview of the six types again, and then let's relate the money types to couples and relationships and marriage.
Because it makes a huge difference in how the couples get along, if they are different money types, which usually they are, to be able to get along in a good way. We've gone into detail in the last segment, but the six types are the strivers, ostriches, debt desperados, coasters, high rollers, and squirrels. So there's a lot of different potential mixtures between those two. I mean, in general, some are more aggressive and optimistic, and some are more negative and pessimistic. The optimistic ones would be the coasters, strivers, and high rollers. The more negative ones would be the debt desperados, ostriches, and squirrels. So, I mean, in general, when you combine these two, people come to a relationship with very, very different views on money. And money really guides an awful lot of things. What kind of house you're going to get, mm-hmm. How you invest? Are you investing conservatively or aggressively? Mm-hmm. Do you want to, buy a bigger house, a small house? Do you want to rent? What kind of a car are you going to get? What kind of vacations you take? Buy high quality things or low quality things? All these financial decisions make a big difference in how a relationship goes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you really have to kind of discuss these things up front. And as I said at the beginning of the show, don't try to change your money type. Be the best you can within your category.
Mm-hmm.
So you are a coaster. So be the best coaster you can be, basically, and realize that you're kind of going along, dealing with things that seem to be okay, but you're not dealing with some of the big issues you have to be dealing with in the future.
Right.
And realize that that's your weakness as a coaster. So maybe your spouse can push you a little bit more to save for retirement or a down payment for a house or make sure you're insured enough or, these things that you're not dealing with, maybe the spouse can be helpful in helping you overcome the negative parts of being a coaster.
And I have a question about that because I have retirement taken care of. I have all that my children are out of college. College is paid. But are there different degrees of each money type? Like,
oh, yes.
You
don't sound like an extreme coaster.
No, I'm not an extreme coaster.
You're a moderate coaster, I guess. But an extreme coaster thinks nothing's wrong whatsoever. And it's like, this is great. We're just going right along and life's fine. So what's the big problem here? Until they get that college tuition bill for $30,000 in the first year. It's like, well, how are we supposed to deal with that? Well, what happened 17 years ago, you know? So
Yeah, I'm a coaster who doesn't like debt, so.
Well, that's fine. But, you know, in the long run, you do have to deal with it. I mean, I'm concerned, particularly about a lot of people not saving enough for retirement. They're going to be living 30, 40 years in retirement. In many cases, between their first 20 years in school and their last 30 or 40 years, they will literally have lived more time not working than working.
And do you think that, because a lot of people say, oh, well, I'll get Social Security. Do you think we can count on Social Security when we retire?
No, I think there is going to be something called Social Security, maybe less than you're getting today. Mm-hmm. But even so, today, about 40% of the people receiving Social Security retirement income, it is their only source of income.
Yes, and it's not much.
Not much at all. You don't want to be living on $1,200 a month or whatever, even $2,000 a month.
No.
And they have not saved a dime, literally. So that's classic coaster behavior. It's like, well, the government will take care of me, or my company will take care of me. Well, in the old days, they would have a pension plan, and then you'd get a nice pension. There hasn't been a pension plan started since about 1978, basically. So
exactly.
You're not going to get a pension plan for the most part. You'll get a 401k or a defined contribution plan, as they're called, where you can choose to put money aside and have it saved for retirement. And about 70% of the people who offer that, who are offered that, do take them up on it. 30% do not. So that's kind of classic coaster mentality as well. So if you have, let's do an extreme example. So we have one of the couple is a coaster, and let's make the other one an ostrich. That's a really dangerous combination, okay? So you have the coaster going along, thinking everything's fine. The ostrich doesn't deal with money at all. So you can see what the problem is going to be with that combination right now.
Yes.
They are not dealing with the money decisions at all. So in a case like that, you really should get a financial advisor involved and really take control and say, no, you just can't coast along. And ostrich, you have to open these statements and get some insurance and take them through all the things in financial planning they've got to do. Those two would be, I guess you'd call them the oblivious categories.
Yes.
You get two of them, and that's pretty dangerous, you know.
I can see that.
You combine a coaster with a squirrel, and you're going to have a lot of emotional conflicts there. The coaster thinks basically everything's fine, and, you know, what's the problem? And the squirrel is completely consumed with, if I make one wrong move, I'm going to be on the street as a bag lady, right?
The sky's falling down.
The sky's falling, and I'm consumed by what could go wrong, and I cannot take any risk whatsoever. I cannot go into any debt for any reason whatsoever. And they're going to have a lot of conflict in your relationship if you have a squirrel and a coaster getting together. Well, let's do an even more extreme example. Let's do a squirrel and a high roller, okay? Now, they're going to have a lot of conflicts there.
They'll be fighting all the time.
The high roller is willing to take all these risks, and the squirrel is absolutely fretting like crazy. This is all going to be a disaster. And they're constantly telling them, no, you can't do that. And the high roller is saying to the squirrel, don't hold me back. I know this day trading thing is going to work out, or I'm flipping houses. Like, get out of my way. I'm confident this is going to be great. What are you holding me back for so much? So you can imagine the conflicts in a relationship between a high roller and a squirrel. So you're getting the idea. There's a lot of different combinations here that can cause enormous conflict if they don't kind of work it out in advance and say, no, I am a high roller, and I know you're a squirrel. Let me be the best high roller I can be, and I respect that you're a squirrel, and let's have a little bit of reach.
Yes. You know, and another combination that seems like it could be have some sparks flying too would be a striver and a debt desperado.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, the strivers, to some extent, strivers would believe in going to debt because they think their idea is going to really work. But debt desperado has no brakes on them whatsoever. They just keep borrowing and borrowing until everything's going to collapse, basically. It's like an alcoholic drinking until they're unconscious, and then they find their moment of truth and come back out of it. The debt desperado has to be completely out of debt, I mean, out of debt sources, I guess you might say, and just keep borrowing until nobody else will lend them anymore. Yeah. And then they kind of have their moment of reform.
Now, what about couples who, and you see, I'm sure you see this very often, but what about the couples who, one of the, and it's usually the husband, one of the partners uses money as power and control in the relationship. What do you,
Well, it's usually causing trouble. Because money can be power and control. What can you spend? What can you not spend? So the wife either submits to that and is controlled and resents it, or they get around it and they start squirreling away money on the side, secret things because they don't want to be controlled in various ways. They don't want to be controlled by what they spend. And so you see this. You see women with money kind of stashed in drawers and, you know, underwear all over the place because they don't want their husband to know that they're doing this.
Exactly.
This is not good for a relationship.
No, because there's a money is a trust issue in a relationship too. And if you have to, let's talk about how people lie a little bit about money, because I think people lie about it without actually telling a big fat lie. I think one of the ways people are not honest about money is, here's an example. I have a friend that used to go shopping, and we would come home and her trunk would be full of packages, but she would leave her packages in the trunk because she didn't want her husband to see how much she had spent.
Right. Very typical. There's a lot of secrecy that goes on about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as though he's not going to find out ever, you know?
Isn't he going to see the credit cards?
Exactly. What does she think, you know? Now,
I don't.
There is a potential solution for this, which is for each part of the couple to have what I call a little mad money, okay?
And I agree.
Don't ask. Well, I'm going to use it on beer and going to the football game, and I'm going to buy, 10 pairs of shoes or something, and don't ask me. It's just what I'm going to do. And it maybe is a bit of a stress reliever to have mad money on both sides that you just don't ask about, particularly if both sides are earning it. Now, if only the man is earning it, the woman can feel resentful and like she's on an allowance or something. But today, in many cases, the woman's earning more than the man. So she should certainly have the right to have her own mad money and spend it how she likes to some extent.
Well, that to me kind of just symbolizes freedom, because even though you're married, people still want to have freedom, and to have a little wiggle room, a little freedom with money is important.
It is, and you want to set this up right from the beginning. And I would say as far as dating and all that, it may not be romantic, but you really want to get the rules of the road straight, I would say, from the first date on. Who's going to pay for what? And just talk about it.
Don't assume.
Don't just assume the man's going to pick up the check, because that could create resentment on the man's part. And just talk about it, about what feels comfortable from the beginning. And it, to some extent, it's based on the economic circumstances of the couple. If both of them are working, maybe they can both afford things. Mm-hmm. If he's making a lot more than she, maybe, it's a discussion. There's not one right or wrong solution. But a lot of people do not discuss these things and run into all kinds of trouble because they haven't set up things from the beginning in the right way.
Right. And that's the key, I think, to set it up in the beginning. And especially, and maybe we can talk about this just a minute when we come back from the break, but especially second marriages, in first marriages, you learn a whole lot about everything. And one of the things you learn about is money. And so maybe we can, when we come back, talk about second marriages just a little bit and some to-dos and to-don'ts before you get married.
Good idea.
Okay, so let's run take a break. This is a good place to stop. And thank you all for joining us. And we'll be right back after this break.
Question: what's working and what's not working in your life? Though we resolve each year to do things differently, and we want what's great for our businesses, our relationships, our health, and more, we don't always know where to turn when life gets tough. That's where Leading Life Large with host Rob Braun comes in. Our show challenges you to reevaluate where you are and keep pushing your way to the success you desire. If you want it bad enough, we can help you turn your life around. Leading Life Large airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment.
Have you figured out what's not working in your business and why? Could you use a little help? Join your host, Tamaran, for Let's Figure It Out Intimately. Tamaran was struggling with the same issue, so she hired other business coaches and experts to help her see what she couldn't. Her journey is to keep learning, and she is here to share this with you so that we can all keep working together. Let's figure it out intimately. Airs live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are listening to The Married with Romance Show with Emily Ann Weber. If you want to call into our show with a question or comment, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to Emily@marriedwithromance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm joined today by my guest, Jordan Goodman, author of Master Your Money Type, and you can find him at moneyanswers.com. And this segment, this last segment, we're going to talk a little bit about second marriages, because I work, and Jordan does too, with a lot of people in second and third marriages, and talk about how you handle money in your second marriage.
So they've brought some experience, good or bad, probably bad if it's a divorced situation, to their relationships. And so they may feel burnt by that. So they may have been a high roller taking all kinds of risks, and they got burnt and things didn't work out well. And now they become more squirrel-like in their second marriage in many cases. Mm-hmm. So both sides have to be very sensitive to what the person went through in their first marriage and try to counteract that to some extent. So some ways of doing that. In many cases, it makes sense to keep at least some, if not all, the money in separate pots. Mm-hmm. As far as inheritance, if they both bring kids to the relationship, you might want to just have your kids inherit things instead of both kids.
Right.
You might have investments where you have separate investment accounts, one of them being aggressive, one of them being more conservative. You're bringing not only yourselves, but you're bringing your past relationship into the new relationship. And all that means about the money habits and what you learned. So you just be very conscious and really have a discussion about it. This is not fun to have these kinds of discussions.
It is not.
But you really want to clear the air on these things and tell, you know, he wouldn't let me spend anything on shoes, and now I'm going to make up for it, or whatever it may be. Or, you know, she controlled my money terribly and wouldn't let me invest, or whatever. You don't want them projecting what happened in their first relationship onto the second one without a full discussion of the whole situation.
Right. And an example would be my husband and I both had previous marriage. And so we came to this marriage and we talked about it beforehand. He has his money. I have my money. And then we have some, a little together money, but we pretty much keep our assets separate. But we have a discussion, and this goes back to the trust factor, too. Even though we make our own money, we have our own money, we have our own assets, because we're married, because we have that relationship, not because we have to ask permission, but we sit down and we kind of keep each other abreast of, so you know, our spending, or like if we're going to make a purchase, like, you know, like a larger purchase, we just talk to each other about it. So we kind of each knows what the other is doing, because that to me is a trust factor. It's definitely not about permission. It's like just in a marriage, you have a husband, a wife, and the marriage. So it's letting that marriage piece, you know the deal, know what's going on.
And if you make a large purchase, maybe both contribute. You buy a car or some big thing. Both contribute to it, so you feel like it's both of yours.
Right.
When one person dominates financially, it creates resentment on both sides. The person who's paying for most of it feels unappreciated, and the first person receiving it feels powerless to some extent. And so it can create reverberations in the marriage based on how the whole power situation for money is treated. And particularly if they've already had a relationship in the first place where they're coming off of that and comparing the current situation to the previous one.
Yes, yes. Now, if you, if a young couple came to you and they ask you, now neither one had been married before, and they ask you, should they have separate bank accounts, what would you tell them?
In many cases, I think it's a good idea to at least have, if they're both earning money. I think the majority of the money should be combined. But I think they should have some mad money, maybe 10% of their money on their own to do what they like with. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, Social Security, you want to be building up a Social Security record of your own.
Right.
In credit. You want to have
credit,
in your own name. I mean, this is a big problem. A lot of women have all their credit cards basically in their husband's name. They just have their name on it, but it's not their credit record. And then the husband dies or divorced or something. Credit-wise, people have no idea who this person is, because even though they've had credit cards, they have no credit record on their own.
Right.
So you want them building up their own credit, their own investments, their own Social Security, their own 401k. This is a healthier way to do it instead of having one be dependent on the other.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you, this is changing tracks just a little bit, can you be, and I think this would be the squirrel category, can you be too safe with your money?
Absolutely. Well, as I talked about before, if today where you earn nothing on your money in CDs and money market funds and treasury bills, and your cost of living is going up, you're definitely being too safe with your money. You're not taking any capital risk, but you're taking purchasing power risk, because while the money's sitting there earning nothing, your cost of living is going up, so you're actually falling behind.
Right.
So absolutely, squirrels can be too safe with their money.
And so can coasters.
Coasters can be too. Coasters probably don't get around to it, or they think it'll take care of itself somehow. But squirrels can be. Squirrels are consumed by risk of loss. If you think you're going to make, you know, you're going to buy some stock and it's going to go down, and the next moment you're on the park bench with your bags and the bag lady syndrome, you know, you make you very, very cautious about saving money. I opened the chapter on squirrels with the story of a woman who saved, who didn't invest in anything, and she was just, and when she died, she was like in the YWCA or something. And she had like $84 million saved in cash in her apartment, something like that, that nobody knew about whatsoever.
My goodness.
Consumed by fear all the time. So there are people like that.
And I wanted to ask you, too, because I always wanted to ask a financial expert this, and now I have the chance. You always hear about people that win the lottery. So this would be, I guess, a comfort level with money.
Right.
You hear stories about people that win the lottery and in it's not too many years, they have basically lost it all to kind of get back to their comfort zone with money.
Correct. So I actually did a story on this. I worked at Money Magazine for 18 years, and I did a story on this. 40% of the people who receive more than $1 million in a lottery are bankrupt within 3 years.
3 years.
Three years.
Yeah. That just seems impossible.
Well, what happens is they don't have a kind of a container to receive the money that they're getting. They're not set up for it. So the first thing that happens is they find out they have all kinds of friends and relatives they didn't know they had before who have all kinds of wonderful sob stories about why they need the money, why you, the lottery winner, don't really need it, but I've got this medical condition or whatever it may be, debts and so on. So they end up giving away a lot of the money even before they get it in the first place. They forget about taxes. They don't invest it in many cases, and it can be a financial disaster for them. In many, many cases, this happens. So they're psychologically not ready to receive money, or they switch from a squirrel to a high roller all of a sudden. Well, I'm going to have unlimited money. This happens particularly with athletes. Remember Allen Iverson, who was one of the big guard stars, bought 8 Rolls Royces, and he had like this $50 million contract or something. And now he's penniless. So this happens all the time when you have a sudden amount of money. People are not don't have the container to handle it psychologically, and they can cause a lot of problems. So there's your answer right there.
Yeah. So if any of y'all win the lottery, first thing do, get a financial advisor.
Absolutely. And this is why people go into hiding, because they don't want all these friends and relatives they didn't know about before.
And that would pull at your heart. If you had a relative that had financial needs and 10 relatives, it would pull at your heartstrings. You would want give them your money.
You would, but you don't think about yourself in many cases. So, yeah, I mean, what happens is people see the big winner, and they see the guy with the big check, you know, and the black hat and this whole big extravaganza, and they say, I wish I could be that guy. Sometimes you'd be surprised. It may not be the best outcome for you to win a huge amount of money quickly, as much as you might think it's a good idea.
Yes. You hear the horror stories behind it, too.
Right.
What about, like, if you had the young couple again? I'm asking you, like, real-life scenarios. Well, I think we've only got 2 minutes. Oh, shoot, we just don't have enough time today. If you had a really young couple about to get married, and their plan, they both had a job, they both had income, their plan is to buy a house one day. What advice would you give them about how to save money? Is there a percent?
Don't, don't just put it in a savings account where you're going to earn nothing. Put it in stocks or mutual funds or something that's going to grow. Because today, banks want like a 20% down payment, which is a lot.
Right. It's a huge amount of money.
If you just put money in a savings account earning nothing, it'll take you for long. The average age of the first-time homebuyer today is 42.
Okay? Wow.
Because it takes a long time to get a good credit score, to build up a down payment, to be able to qualify today. So have that money growing for you so you get to that down payment much more quickly. Otherwise, it'll take you forever to buy the house.
Mm-hmm. So again, it would behoove you to get a financial advisor to give them your goals and let them help you achieve that.
Absolutely. And take advice of a good financial advisor and put it into action. A lot of people are very suspicious of financial advisors. They're so worried about what commissions he may earn.
Right.
Now I don't want him to earn any commissions, so I'm going to keep my money in savings bonds earning nothing, basically. So they cut off their nose to spite their face. If you have a good financial advisor, he charges you some fees. It can be well worth it many times over to get you action, particularly people like you or coasters who don't tend to take action. Get somebody who's going to break through your kind of normal lack of action or kind of inertia to make you start saving and investing and doing all the things we've talked about.
And then my job would be make sure I speak with him and have meetings with him and not just trust him to go do it.
Correct. Be involved in it. Don't just
be involved. Be involved. Exactly. Yeah. Jordan, thank you so much for being here today.
Your information is
not just valuable, it's invaluable. And after reading your book, I've just decided that every couple I know who's getting married, whether first time, second time, or third time, they're getting your book as a wedding gift because it is wonderful.
Well, thanks so much. I'm always glad to take people's emails as well about these topics.
Yes, please.
At moneyanswers.com.
Yes, and Jordan is at moneyanswers.com. He is on Voice America. What day is your show?
Monday from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock Eastern Time.
On the Business Network.
Voice America Business, it's called the Money Answer Show. That's correct.
Right. So y'all please listen in and contact him. And thank you again, Jordan. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks so
much. Michael, thank you for being my engineer extraordinaire and keeping me out of trouble as always. Just wanted to leave everybody with a little quote. It's by Dr. John Gottman, who's one of my favorites. Connecting with your mate is not magic. Like any other skill, it can be learned, practiced and mastered. And that goes with your money too. So get the book, learn your money type, learn how to talk to your mate, and take good care. I'll see you next week. And go out and outlove each other.
Thanks for listening this week. Emily Ann Weber will be back with some more tips and tricks to put the sizzle back in your love life on next week's edition of the Married with Romance Show. Be here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Until then, why don't you try some of what you've heard with your man?